The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
Take four. I can't believe this is my fourth try today at this podcast. The first time I was 15 minutes into it before I realized I hadn't hit the record button. The second time is about 10 minutes into it and the dog started barking nonstop, so I gave up. The third time, the dog started barking a little bit, but I shut the door and then the doorbell rang, which it never rings. I can't remember the last time the doorbell rang. And I go to answer the door and it's the Jehovah's Witnesses. And the dog is barking, like crazy barking. So I shut it all down and went for a walk and tried to clear my head because I was getting really irritated, as you can imagine, because I'm a redhead. That's what we do. So anyway, I am back to try this again. Hopefully the dogs will chill and everybody can just be quiet because I don't have a studio. I'm just doing this in my office. And the dogs have to be by me along with cats. I've got four animals strewn around me right now, sleeping. Anyway, so on with the show. I want to talk about a couple things. Yesterday when I ended my last podcast, I had forgot to mention, or I started mentioning my new book, which is Ginger Snapped, and it is available now at Apple, Barnes & Noble or Nook, Google Play and Amazon, where you can, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, you can get both digital versions and printed versions. The other ones, it's just digital. And I wanted to just kind of go over a little bit about the book and how it came to be and then that sort of thing. So you can read about it on my website, redheadranting.com. If you scroll down, there's a section there with links to the various platforms where you can purchase it. I hope you do. That's how I make a living. Anyway, so Ginger Snapped is it's memoir, but it's kind of looking back or looking at today and what's going on through the lens of growing up as Gen X, right? Growing up in the 70s and 80s. And it's also through the lens of, you know, I grew up in a really strange household. Originally, the book was going to be, or it's part of, you know, my memoir, which was Minnesota Nice. And I never released it because of a couple different things, but that I'm not allowed to talk about. But also, it just didn't have, I didn't like the tone that it took. It took on a really angry and dark tone. And that wasn't what I was trying to put out there. I always wanted to write humor. That's always been the goal, is to tell my stories, but also to have them be funny. And because I think they are funny. I think the stories are funny. But if you follow me, or if you're anywhere aware of that book, you'll know that my mom had a stroke when I was 4 years old. I just turned four. She was 29. And we had just moved to Colorado. You know, so we were living in the high altitude, or we had just moved from low altitude to high altitude or whatever. She also had pneumonia and she was a smoker. And all of that was at one time. And she just... I also think she might have had Legionnaire's disease. They never were really sure because we were on an army base. And anyway, neither here nor there. But she collapsed. Her lungs filled with fluid and she couldn't breathe. So they had to do an emergency tracheotomy. And while they were doing that, she went into cardiac arrest and died. They did get her back. They got her heart going again. But she'd had so much anoxia or lack of oxygen to her brain that she, had a fair amount of brain damage. So she had no short-term memory and that never came back. She always struggled with they took forever. She couldn't remember anything. So she's kind of like Dory from Finding Nemo. And at first she didn't recognize, she didn't know who my brother and I were. She was expecting, she thought she was in the hospital because she was having another baby. She was very confused for a long time, and actually throughout most of her life. She also had a lot of mental, or not physical, she had physical disabilities as well. So she had to learn how to walk again and how to talk. And I remember, you know, watching my brother teach her how to tie her shoes when he taught me how to tie my shoes. And, you know, I dressed her every morning before school, and I bathed her several times a week, washed her hair, you know, did all that sort of thing. And we had help. We had a housekeeper and people who helped with, you know, the other chores around the house that she couldn't do. But, you know, I wouldn't say primary caretaker, but I was there most of the time. So I was the one doing a lot of the caretaking. So it was a really bizarre relationship. It was kind of turned upside down. And then on top of it, a few years later, my dad was outed as gay. So it was a really weird dynamic to grow up in. And there was, you know, it was chaotic. It was the 70s on top of it. You know, they stayed married until my dad passed away in, I don't know, 15 so years ago. And they had a happy marriage, you know, and that's God, it's so weird. Anyway, I don't want to go into that too much, but I cover that in the book a little bit. And so it's looking through that lens at a lot of what's going on today and kind of cultural, whatever, you know, references and things like that. But it's also very nostalgic. So it's a lot of fun. I've had great responses. My ex-husband read it. He said it was great. He loved it. I don't know if he said that. He said, no, I think he said, great book. That was the text he sent me. Anyway, I was pleased. I was happy that he read it and that he liked it. And then I didn't write anything about him in it. That's the next book, which is called Bad Dates. But I'm almost finished with that. That should be out hopefully by the end of the month. Anyway, that's getting off track. So anyway, I hope you get a chance to check it out. I had a lot of fun writing it. It was therapeutic. And that was the other thing I was getting at is that, you know, with the original book, I didn't like the tone it took on. I had a magical childhood. I know it doesn't necessarily sound like that. And there was a time I didn't believe it, but it really was a great time to grow up in the 70s. We were, you know, we left all the things that they say about Gen X are true. We drank out of the hose. We're feral and all that sort of thing. We'd get up in the morning and we'd leave and come back when the streetlights came on. You never knew, you know, the part of that is that there was always, you know, moms were still home for the most part. They were just beginning to go off to work, but there was always somebody around and the families were much bigger. So there were always older kids kind of looking out for younger kids. It was very much a community. Unlike, you know, it's not so much today because the families are just so much smaller. But, so I'm hoping that the books I'm putting out now, and I've got four coming out, reflect the fact that I really am grateful for the life that my parents gave me. And I didn't always appreciate that. And I think, you know, we kind of have a lot of kids right now going through something similar where they, you know, don't feel that they can connect with their parents. They don't agree with them for whatever reasons. And, you know, a lot of them have estranged themselves. And I don't think that that's I don't think that's healthy at all. I had issues, you know, I or not issues, but I had disagreements with my parents. And at one point I did run away to Washington State with a now ex-husband. But, and I mentioned that in the book, but I wasn't trying to estrange. I just needed space and they needed space and all of that. So anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that the book is personal. I hope you find it amusing. Like I say, the response I've had or the reviews I've had have been that people enjoyed it. And it's also, it's a short read. It's, I think, 140 pages. It's stories. Like each story is its own thing. They don't build on each other necessarily. So you can pick it up and read it. You know, it doesn't matter what chapter you start at. So can toss it in your purse and read it on the bus or in the bathroom or wherever you happen to be. Anyway, I hope you like it. And that's all I have to say about that. The next thing was I had a really weird dream last night. Maybe it was this morning, and it was kind of this, I had a dream that there was this baby squirrel that was caught between the window and the screen. Like it had crawled into the screen or something. And there was, you know, it, not like storm windows, but I don't know. It was a dream. And I was in this like college building. And I like old timey, more Harry Potter style school than, you know, the modern day ones that we have. And I think that was because I watched The Paper Chase the other night. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a movie from 1972 or 3 or something like that, early 70s. And it's John Houseman. He plays a professor teaching law and I want to say corporate law or something or I don't know, boring law. And his daughter, who is Lindsay Wagner, which I was not aware of ever. I didn't know she was in it. And if you're not Gen X, you know, you don't know who she is, but she was, she played the Bionic Woman, a show that we grew up on and everybody loved. It was a spinoff from The $6 Million Man, which was another most, one of the best theme, not theme songs, but introductions. If you Google it, it's great. We have, you know, the technology, we can rebuild him. All that. Anyway, Bionic Woman was not as good as The $6 Million Man, but it was about girls and women. So when, you know, it was all of that empowerment. In the movie, The Paper Chase, she plays the daughter of the professor. And, you know, she's involved with one of his students and there's, you know, they're shacking up and all that sort of thing. Typical 1970s movie. And she's just obnoxious in the way she treats her father. And it's similar in The Graduate and some other movies from that time. What are the other one? Love Story, where you've got these rich kids who, you know, think less of their parents and they call them by their first name and they're just really obnoxious. And I, the reason I even bring this up is that I wouldn't have liked Bionic Woman if I had seen The Paper Chase. And now I was 6 when it came out, so I wasn't going to see The Paper Chase. But it's kind of like today, you know, what Pedro Pascal, who's everywhere, and I don't know where he came from, but it's like trying to make Fetch happen. But I don't know. I really don't know where I'm going with that. The dream. So anyway, I'm in this college dorm or whatever it is, and I see this baby squirrel and the squirrel, I feed the squirrels. My neighbor hates it, but I love them and I'm weird. And the mom of the squirrel is trying to get in to save the baby squirrel, except the mom is a raccoon. It made sense. I don't know why it doesn't now. So I went and got somebody to help me who ended up being Rob Lowe as the character he played in St. Elmo's Fire, you know, the bad boy, which that one makes sense because I was actually writing about bad boys for my new book, Bad Dates. And so that was top of mind. Anyway, they get the squirrel out and I set him free onto the quad and he runs off one way. And I'm hoping that the raccoon can, you know, see him and go after him, but she doesn't. She goes the other way. And then I woke up. So I don't know what all that means. And I guess it just reminded me of The Paper Chase. And that's why I wanted to bring that up. I think it sounded better one of the first 3 times I tried this. So just trust me. Moving on. There's been, you know, a lot of, not backlash, but a lot of influencers, people who are influencers on social media and other platforms, I guess it's all social media, who have, you know, been very outspoken about Erica Kirk and her speech. I don't know what you call that, her message that was on the other night. And, you know, the woman is in deep grief. She's not even going to remember these days. She's just getting through each day. So I think the criticism of her is unwarranted and unnecessary. I don't know how it benefits anybody, but apparently there's backlash for people who have spoken out against her or been critical, or maybe it's worse than being critical. But one of them was a streamer or gamer or whatever, and which I don't understand the whole streaming gaming industry. And I know it's big. I know it's huge, but I kind of get it. I guess when I was pregnant with my son back in early 90s, I was on bed rest, and yeah, I guess I do kind of get it. I was on bed rest, and my brother would come over every day during his lunch break. He was a house painter, and it was during the winter time, so he really didn't have a whole lot of houses to paint because it's an outdoor job. I mean, he had indoor stuff, but that doesn't matter. Anyway, so he'd come over and play video games because I had an NES, and his wife had taken his away, so that's why he came over to my house, so he could play Zelda Link, well, Link to the Past, the 2D one that was, I think it scrolled across only to the right on the screen. It was a great game, probably the best game of all the Zelda ones, at least in my, it was way before it got realistic. It was just cartoony, but it was fun and it was cute. And I don't think I've played many of the Zelda games since that game because they, in my mind, aren't as good. But anyway, he would come over and I'd be on the couch because I wasn't supposed to be moving around, and he would play video games for hours, or at least until his wife called and told him to come home. And I would just laugh my ass off at how animated he would get playing. Now, he wasn't talking, like he wasn't commenting on, you know, current events like a lot of the streamers do, which I also find interesting, because if they're playing video games, how do they have time to get caught up on what's going on culturally or politically or any of that? I mean, I don't play video games all day, and I can't keep up with any of this stuff. So I'm kind of perplexed by all of that. But anyway, so this one guy put out this thing saying that he had been banned from whatever platform he was on, and that because of Elon Musk and because of what he said about Erica Kirk, that he was like, he lost all of his income. And what happened is, that was not true. It had happened years ago on a different platform, but he was now on other platforms and had not been banned. So the lesson is that, I mean, and the reason presumably he did this was to get donations and or whatever, people to subscribe or help him out or whatever, which is what we do these days. And I am part of that group, right? I make my money online. I sell books. I hope you know, follow me or subscribe to me, all of that. That's how I make money. There's probably ads in this podcast. So I get that. And going forward, as AI takes over a lot of jobs that a lot of us do, like I used to do a lot of ghostwriting for other people's blogs, you can have AI do that now. So people don't need me to do it. And there's so many other jobs that are going to get really taken away very quickly due to AI, and people are going to go into this, you know, I don't want to say grifting, but in this influencer realm to make money. And not that there's anything wrong with it, but I think you need to be at least honest about what you're doing. So when this influencer goes and says, oh, I lost my job, and he didn't, that to me is pretty shitty. There's another one that recently did something similar. I won't even go into great details, but she, you know, lied to a bunch of people about, you know, being friends, basically. And then she turned around and threw them under the bus and, you know, all the while telling everybody how she blew up her life so that she could prove something. I'm not even sure what. Craziness, really. But in the whole hopes of getting enough views and engagement to make money from Twitter. And it worked, you know. So anyway, so the point is, where I was going with all of that is that we have the ability to curate our experience on any social media platform, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or wherever you hang out, you're going to see what the algorithm thinks you want to see based on the things that you click and the things that you interact with. So if I go to Facebook and watch some reels, which are really Instagram, but they brought them over there, and I watch a lot of duck videos because at the end of the day, I just want to see cute. The algorithm shows me duck videos, squirrel videos, a lot of Charlie Kirk right now, and women trying on clothing, and not in a creepy, weird way, but in a, you know, what do they call that? Like a Macy's haul or something. So they're trying on different styles of clothing based on their body shape, which tends to be like mine. So, it's a way to kind of virtually shop, I guess, so that then you would, if you like what, how it looked on her, that you might buy the piece of clothing and then she gets a commission from that. So that's how that works. But it's also just kind of fun. I'm not a particularly fashionable person myself. So for me, I like watching those videos to see how to style clothing, even though I don't go anywhere where I would need it styled like that. And again, very, you know, nicely done, not creepy or anything like that. But so that's the algorithm that I see on that platform. If I'm on Twitter, you know, I see different stuff because it's, you know, who I interact with and what they're talking about and all that sort of thing. So anyway, my point is that we all have the ability to curate our spaces, and we can either lean into the negativity, which it's real easy to do because that's what gets your, you know, the dopamine hit from anger is just as, it's probably better than any other emotion, right? It's the one that we really feel. And so when somebody says something outrageous, we have to correct them or we have to school them. And that's why they do it. So you've got I can't remember their name, the K brothers. They're like these political, not pundits, but I think they're paid by the DNC to put outlandish stuff out there. And so they say absolutely stupid things that aren't true and aren't true by, I mean, they know it's not true, but they put it out there because it makes money. And again, because people see it, they get irate and they immediately want to, you know, either call them out as liars or educate them on, you know, how they're wrong. And the stuff that they're putting out there, nobody would believe it. Absolutely nobody would believe it. But it still gets millions of hits. So my point in what I've been doing most of this week is stop sharing this stuff. Because every time you share it, especially if you show the original, even if you're just doing a screenshot, if you show the original at followed by the username, people see that and they go to the original post so that they can still call the guy out or the girl or woman or whatever, for whoever saying whatever they're saying. So it's not necessary, because when one person does it, you get all of the influencers putting the same content out, which is boring. Nobody wants to see any of that. But again, it makes money. So I don't know. I've been trying to really pay attention to what I interact with online. And I don't always do a great job, but I don't want to see a lot of this stuff. I don't want to see stupid stuff. I don't want to see people that lie. I really hate that, you know, and there's a lot of it. So we have the power and I think we should use it. And other than that, the only other thing I had was, you know, there's a lot of this left versus right stuff, especially in light of the Charlie Kirk assassination and the Luigi Mangione trial that's happening now, along with the guy who tried to shoot Trump, the second guy. I can't remember his name. Root? No. Anyway, they're all kind of in the news right now. And, you know, there's a lot of this, well, the left is saying this or the right is saying that. And I don't think it's a left versus right thing anymore. I think we're way past that because, you know, most of the people that I tend to lean right. I would I don't know if conservative is the right word, but I'm more moderate. I would say conservative, but not heavy duty. You know, I have quite a few liberal, you know, values and things like that. I'm all for gay marriage. I'm reluctantly pro-choice, and that's another story altogether. But most of the people that I've come to know, especially in the last year, you know, with the campaign and everything like that, are former left, you know, former Democrats. So I don't think it's a left versus right thing, anything. I think it's a fringe versus the rest of us. And unfortunately, the fringe just tends to be, well, and the media. So it's the fringe and the media versus the moderates, the left of center and the right of center, and, you know, the freaks on the right too, the way on the alt-right or whatever. And I'm not aligning with them. But I think we need to get away from this left versus right thing. That seems to be the same type of, at least for the people in power, the same type of, again, not grift, but influencing sort of thing is what you see online. It's getting the headlines. It's making the newscasts and all that sort of thing, because it's all about clicks. So you get, who was arguing with Kash Patel yesterday? It was Cory Booker. And, you know, they don't even get to speak to one another. They just talk over each other. And I want to hear what each one of them has to say. But they're just, both of them are going for headlines and going for sound bites and all of that. And I just, again, like what we curate on the internet and social media, I think we have more power here than we believe we do. And I think we should use it. So I don't know what to make of that. I'm not, there's no call to action or anything like that. I'm just food for thought. So anyway, going forward, because I'm at about 25 minutes at this point, 26. I'm hoping to do one of these every day. I don't want to have it go any longer than 30 minutes because nobody wants to hear me talk that long. But I'd ideally like to do one of these every day. And I want to stay away from politics, and I really would rather get into more kind of stuff that, like, kind of what's in my book sort of thing. Just because I think that's more fun and a little more interesting, and everybody else does the politics, and I'm not educated enough to weigh in on any of that by any stretch of the imagination. So anyway, I thank you for listening today, and I hope that you continue to listen and pick up my book and let me know what you think about it. Thanks a lot. Have a great one.